Here they are, right. No, I'll get that.
Perfect, thanks. So, is it okay if I sit down or do you want me to stand up? I just wanted, before I get started, I wanted to get a show of hands how many took my class last summer on Gaudi, just to get a sense of, okay, so for those of you that might not be familiar with his work, or even Barcelona for that matter, I've prepared a few slides just to kind of go through some of the stops that we'll be making on the itinerary, primarily focusing on the ones that have interior visits, where we'll actually get to go inside the buildings. There's about, eight or nine of those. And so obviously we'll be spending a little bit more time in those buildings. The others will be just taking a look at them from the street. And the guide, the local guide there, will basically kind of be discussing that building, the significance, and pointing out features, that type of thing. My own, personally, myself, Gaudi is at the top of my list as far as architects go. So I consider him to be the most creative architect that I know of as far as his work. So it's, as you can imagine, I'm very thrilled to get a chance to go to Barcelona and see his work again. In addition to that, this itinerary that's been laid out, for those that maybe are not familiar with his work, it's a great itinerary, the way it's laid out for getting exposed to his work for the first time. When we land there the first day, we're going to be seeing two of his most playful projects, really kind of the candy of his work, in Casa Batlló and Casa Emilia. And since we'll be getting to those in the afternoon, I'm assuming that we'll be up on the rooftop of Casa Emilia as the sun's setting and getting to see the city with the lights on and everything. It could be quite spectacular. But then the following day, we'll be going to Casa Vicens, which is also another very playful house, one of his earlier projects. And then the day after that, or that same day, after Casa Vicens in the afternoon, we'll be getting to Sagrada Familia, which is his magnum opus. I mean, it'll blow you away. If that's not enough, we'll be following up then with two projects that I see as really kind of the essence of his work, which is the crypt church in the colony that Güell created, his worker colony. And that project is considered by pretty much the experts in the field as really his crowning piece as far as showing the essence of all the things that really make Gaudi Gaudi. And so after kind of getting wowed and dazzled by Sagrada Familia, and you'll get a little bit deeper dive the following day into that project, as well as on the way back to the city, because that's out in the countryside, we're going to stop off and see Güell's country home and see the Dragon Gate, which is also pretty much, and actually I'm starting off here with that, that's a good segue. The Dragon Gate is pretty much, even though it was his first project, it has elements of all of his signatures that you'll see throughout all of his projects through the rest of his career. So that's a phenomenal one. And then if you're worn out by that point, the following day we'll spend in the park, Parc Güell. And Parc Güell is this beautiful landscape that's outdoors, and much like Central Park, if you're familiar with that in New York City, or Frick Park here in Pittsburgh. Where it's just overtaken by vegetation, but the scenic view, it has probably the best view of not only Barcelona, but the Mediterranean beyond it. And so it's a nice kind of leisurely walk in the park. And then also the really what I'm really looking forward to at the end of the week then is the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao. And so to finish off with that, I mean, I can't imagine any other better finish. So it should be a great itinerary and a tour. Looking forward to it. And just one other mention. So the slides I'm going to show you here, there's quite a few. I'm going to flip through them pretty quick just to kind of give you a little sampling of what, you know, whet your appetite. But I don't have them kind of laid out according to the itinerary that will be seen. I have them more laid out thematically for the course that I'm going to be teaching this summer. I'm going to do a course this summer on the trip that we're taking in the fall. So it's going to highlight the architecture of Barcelona and Bilbao, specifically related to Gaudi and his influence on the contemporary architecture that will also be seen on this trip. And so if you're signing up for the trip in the fall, definitely sign up for the class in the summer, because it'll give you a great precursor to all the background information. So when you get there, you'll be able to enjoy the architecture that much more by having a little bit of background information on it. So as I mentioned, this is his country estate or country home, Güell, who was Gaudi's largest patron through his career. He fed him quite a few projects. And you can see here the brickwork, probably the single greatest thing that defines Gaudi's work is his mastery of brick. And you can see the various detailing. It shows off his creativity, just the way that he laid it. But the brickwork is really what defines his career. And but that said, he's probably most known for his tiles. You can see at the top here the tile work. These are mosaics. And in specifically, here's these rectangular tiles. Specifically, these broken tiles here are called trinquatus mosaics. And that's a broken tile. And that's a technique that he developed that we'll see as you go through here. He also, one of the other things that he did was he would take broken fragments as he was breaking the tiles and he integrated into the architecture. And this would, this was kind of like this redemptive quality that he tried to bring to the architecture, where even though these are scraps that typically would just get thrown out, he's elevated them now to where they've become features in the work as far as detailing that just glistens and adds some color to the work. This concept of breaking the tiles came from working with these parabolic shapes and these circular forms, because with these circular forms where they taper down, they get smaller as they go up. If you were to make tiles that were laid by a professional, you would have to make the tiles get smaller as they go up. Every tile would have to be a custom piece. And of course, you can imagine that's quite expensive. He worked remarkably on some of the tightest budgets that he had. So he was able to find ways to make the stuff just absolutely stunning on a shoestring budget. And one of those ways was by breaking the tiles and having unskilled labor lay them. And so that was just some technique he threw off. So this is all... one other little feature I'll mention, these tiles are adobe mud tiles, which is a technique that he brought up from southern Spain. He actually imported or had Güell pay to bring them up to actually lay those tiles. This is the Dragon Gate that is well published. Just shows off some of the metal work that he was very skilled at. And then this was his first house commission, Casa Vicens. We'll see this on the second day of our trip. This was by a patron that owned a tile factory, so he wanted to show off. He wanted to show off the his wares of what he was selling, and so Gaudi had no problem doing that. This I'll point out to you as we'll see. This is a cast iron palmetto leaf. That was cast, and then it was laid on a ready-made frame. And that technique you'll see a little bit later on here. But this was on his first project, Casa Vicens, and he carries that all the way through that technique. Also here in Casa Vicens, you'll see another thing you'll notice. It's not the warpage here of the screen, but you can see the wall kind of warps a little bit there. And so something as simple as that, where this room over here is a little bit larger than this room over here, rather than just having a square turn and bumping it out, he's kind of faded it along and he's curved it. And that curve is kind of like a little bit of a hint of what he's got coming decades later in his projects. On the rooftop here, this is a ventilator that would supply air to the house. And this was also a signature of Gaudi. His decorations of these rooftop ventilators and chimneys are really some of his signature feats. This is inside Vicens. There's quite a bit of treatment on the interior decoration and the ceilings. This was all done with paper mache, believe it or not, which was at the time was the new technique and material. This is a back porch. And then we'll get to Park Güell. And this is, again, the entry here. You can see the tiles, again, fragmented and broken in order to kind of be able to lay them across this very organic shape of this sculpture of this this lizard. And then the tile work up along of the terrace at the top here is probably his most famous work. This is inside, underneath that terrace, supported by this colonnade that has tiles in it. And in the tile work, you can see fragments of bottles. So it's, you know, this idea of trying to take throwaways and castaways and utilize them, almost kind of frugal. Yeah, these are quite spectacular. And you can see also from the terrace there, the view across Barcelona and the Mediterranean beyond. So this is also one of the more contemporary structures that we'll stop by and discuss. I put this in, and so a lot of the more contemporary ones, as you'll see in the class this coming summer, you'll see the influence of Gaudi on these more contemporary works that are in Barcelona and Bilbao that we'll be visiting. You can see here the kind of the mosaics of the different pieces that he's using behind the skin here to kind of create this mosaic pattern. Up close, you can see also it's got this layer of these fins, louvers that allow ventilation, which we'll get into a little bit more in the class, but that vented louver is also a Gaudi signature. This is a subway stop by Norman Foster. We actually have one of these downtown Pittsburgh by the same architect. This was a precursor to the one downtown. And then, of course, Sagrada Familia. This is still under construction today. They're supposed to wrap it up here in about 6 years, I believe, 6 or 7 years. The main two peaks are still going up. They'll be up off the screen here when they're finished. But at the time when Gaudi was alive, he worked primarily on this nativity facade here that you see. And this was really a study of natural form. He created these figures in here all himself personally, and they're actually cast from live models, as well as, you look closely, there's also animals through here, and plants. He cast all this stuff in plaster from live models, as opposed to the traditional sculptor route that carves in clay. And in the class, we'll get into a little more depth into the significance of that, but he was primarily trying to look to nature to see how nature solves design problems and try to imitate nature. And that was kind of ahead of his time, but inside the same thing, the structure of the building is very much the same way, looking towards trees and how trees support canopies. This is looking up at the ceiling inside of the Sagrada Familia. The trip also makes a stop to the Barcelona Pavilion by Mies van der Rohe, probably the most significant modern building in from the modern era. Believe it or not, this has some connection to the Gaudi. Loosely, the figure being accentuated like we just saw in the Nativity facade. This is another contemporary building by an architectural firm called IMB. This is actually in Bilbao. It's a library. And then, like I mentioned before, this is the crypt in his colony, Güell's colony. This is probably considered by the architectural community as really his most important work in many different ways. But you can see here the architectural supports, the columns, and kind of like these diagonal spans, what he considered like incline columns. This was something he was working out in this project that he then applied to the Sagrada Familia, which came later. So this was kind of like his test case. And that kind of incline column, again, was something that he pulled from nature, noticing that trees necessarily don't always grow straight up. I'll point out here in the window, these are actually the screen here is made from knitting needles. that he repurposed, because the colony was actually Guell's, where he manufactured textiles. This is back at Park Guell. You can see here that he, or I'm sorry, yes, and you can see the inclined columns again. This is off to the left here is the hillside, and so he's supporting all of that load in this colonnade, kind of naturally taking advantage of these inclines. And you see here on the right, this is one of the columns in the Sagrada Familia. And so he kind of translated that. This was all something he developed through kind of empirical methods that was really ahead of its time at that. But all through the park, these columns, each one of these is designed stylistically different. There's kind of really no repetition, so it just really accentuates his creativity. This is in the Sagrada Familia again. The towers here are, this is inside the tower. On the tour, you can actually go up in the tower if you choose. And inside there, you can see these bands. There's 12 of these bands that go around and form the circle. And so these little slots here are actually these ventilators again, where the tower breeze also resonates the sound from the bell tower. But those bands are actually creating a catenary curve arch. And that's, again, one of his signatures. You can see it here as these bands go up, they form an arch and come back down. It's like the most naturally stable form as far as arches. And along those lines, these are one of the bridges we'll see in Bilbao by an architect, Calatrava, that was very familiar with catenary curves. An asymmetric bridge. This is actually, he had this wonderful idea of having glass, so that way he could illuminate at night, which as you can see is quite dramatic. Unfortunately, when it rains, it's very slippery. And so they had some serious problems, because I guess Bilbao does get some rain, much like Pittsburgh. So they've got a rubber mat on rainy days they roll out, and then they take up on sunny days. This is the Bilbao Airport we'll be flying out of when we leave. So this will be the last piece of architecture we'll actually get to experience. By the same architect that made the bridge, quite dramatic. Another piece, this is back in Barcelona. You can see the angled columns, the facades. Broken up very much like a mosaic pattern on the face. This is Casa Batlló, which is the first building we'll see when we land and arrive. It's probably his most playful house project. It's rife with all kinds of metaphor. The roof is a phenomenal roof structure. I mean, there's quite a bit. I could talk for an hour on the roof. But the roof is a metaphor for not only the mountain line of Barcelona in the distance, but also the sleeping dragon that's sitting atop the roof here. And you can see the balconies look almost like masks. They refer kind of like carnival masks, and then all these little dots on the wall are confetti. And so it's referencing the Venetian carnival, because the building owner was very much a fan of Venice. But in addition to the carnival masks, he also, with his metalwork inside him, he kind of had a two-case metaphor of the knights that slayed the dragon that's sitting up on top of the roof. And so it has quite a bit of symbolism leafed through it. But it's quite dramatic. As well as you can see lit at night, which I believe we'll be seeing at night when we... you can see this is down at the street level. This is all stone, solid stone. And so he's sculpting this, and it's becoming very what they call plastic in form, just because of its sculptural nature. And so he was, you know, something you would typically just find in art. He was bringing this to architecture. And so really this is what his contribution to contemporary architecture today is, this... this kind of parabolic and form of of design. Then just down the street is Casa Amelia. We'll be visiting this, going up onto the roof. This is the facade, quite sculptural. Even the railing is quite unique. This is the main gate into the inside. And then we get up onto the rooftop. And the roof is contoured, so it's not necessarily all flat, but it's littered with these ventilators and chimneys that are all decorated, each one individually. It's quite spectacular. These, again, kind of referencing back to the knights that we saw in the last house. Here's another one where he was working with broken bottles. The story goes that these were all from the workers that would drink at the end of the day. And then from the rooftop, it frames the view, actually, of the Sagrada Familia, so which is kind of a nice little... We'll take a look at... This is Casa Batlló we just looked at. Next door is one of his contemporaries. This house next door actually was built before Gaudi's house, so his came in afterwards. But we'll look at that on the trip, as well as just down the street, this one as well, by another of his contemporaries that's quite famous through Barcelona. And then a third one here. You can see this one came after Gaudi, and you can see Gaudi's influence on his work. And then on our bus trip to Bilbao, one of the stops that we mentioned is comfort stops will be this bridge here by Zaha Hadid, who's an Iraqi British architect. You can see that Gaudi's influence on her work as far as the sculptural nature of the form. I'm coming back to this. We're back at the crypt again. I just wanted to point out one of the key things that this crypt did was he has these convex curves on the inner side of his vaults. Typically, a vault is concave in order to support naturally. So he explored the inverse of that on this, and then ended up carrying that through in his latest work, tail end of his life. And had some really amazing innovations as a result of that. Over at the park, a lot of that came from the gatehouses at the park. These are the gatehouses, the roofs on the gatehouses. You can see the forms of them have a lot of these convex, concave forms that are kind of interwound. And figuring out how to actually structurally frame that was where he developed this idea of doing these vaults in the inverse. His biggest achievement was probably in the schoolhouse, which is right next to the Sagrada Familia. We'll be going through this as well. The roof of this, you can see this kind of undulation of the convex concave. At the time, in the late 20s, Le Corbusier, if you're familiar with his work, he attributed this building as probably the most significant building in all of Europe at that time. When he toured this building in the late 20s. You can see the underside of that roof, how he was able to take the brickwork. Again, here's Gaudi's brickwork that he was a master of, and he was able to lay that with the convex and then the concave and pull that roof off. Did that with the walls as well, not just the roof. So the walls undulate. And here's a winery that will be stopping off one of the comfort stops. Hopefully it involves a glass of wine. This is by the same guy that did the asymmetric bridge, Calatrava. You can obviously see the parallel of his roof to the schoolhouse, as well as the inclined walls here. This is inside the winery. And you can see the same framing here with the undulations. And then this is in Barcelona, a market in Barcelona that was done just recently. Again, same type homage on the roof. Even the roof design, they broke up the roof tiles to create kind of like that mosaic kind of feel. Again, a homage to Gaudi. This is the underside of the market roof. This is a piece of work in Barcelona. This one I find kind of interesting. We'll see this one as well. It's a little interesting because these are all brand new materials, but he's kind of rendered them in such a way that they look like that they're, you know, pieces scavenged from elsewhere. And so, again, he's kind of paying homage to the fact that Gaudi was able to take, you know, scavenged materials. And in fact, Gaudi at one point, he told his workers as they're on their way to the job site, stop by the other projects in that you pass and pick up all their scraps off the ground and bring it to our job site. And so they would just gather like tile scraps and everything by the bucketful. So he was a master of scavenging. This is in Barcelona. This is the Golden Fish by Frank Gehry. This structure is a steel frame with these stainless steel ribbons that are attached to it in order to get this completely organic curved form that we see in Gaudi's work. This was done in modern times in order to get this free form fish, which Gehry also attributes the design of this to a fish, again, looking to nature for inspiration. But what's interesting about this was the first structure that was ever built using AutoCAD to determine the location and the lengths and the connections and the angles and of all these points. And so they were able, through a computer in 92, to replicate this completely organic form in which couldn't be done without that kind of precision. It would have to be done by hand, like Gaudi did 100 years before. But this was a precursor to what we'll be seeing at the tail end of our trip, which is the Guggenheim Museum. And again, all these forms that are very organic in shape, free-flowing, they're built the same way that we just saw with the golden fish. They have a skeleton behind it, made of straight pieces that have this skin that's applied. The same technique that we saw with in the very beginning with the cast iron palmetto leaves, the way that he applied them to the kind of this rigid frame. The tiles that are on here, again, laid up the same way as you would like mosaic tiles. This is the interior, the lobby. You can see the quite graceful forms. And you also see here the glass pieces that are also pieced like tiles, and they're laid on the frames over here. Much the same way that we find with Gaudi's ceramics. This is looking up at the ceiling of the entry. And then through the main gallery space, which was designed specifically for this piece right here that's by Richard Serra. And then one last building here, which was done, I believe, about 10 years ago. Again, these facets that are all applied that enable kind of this organic form and shape. Simply by the kind of like the broken, irregular shapes of these facets. A lesson taken straight out of Gaudi's textbook. That's it.
So, is there any questions at this point that you have? And if someone asked me about brochures, they're on the website. You can print them or